Welcome back. My name is A.B. Ridgeway. I'm the host of Financial Advisors Say the Darndest Things in My Mom's Favorite Christian Financial Advisor. Are you living paycheck to paycheck and afraid that you won't be able to retire? That you feel that you're one emergency away from being bankrupt? Well, you're not alone. Today, brothers and sisters, we are going to go over a video that's going to answer that question for you. I want you to tune in because this is very serious.
More than half of Americans with an income of $100,000 a year or higher say they're living paycheck to paycheck. This may be the result of a sneaky behavioral phenomenon called lifestyle creep.
Lifestyle creep is the common pattern of making a little more money and starting to spend a little bit more money. Amen. It happens almost automatically.
I think people hold these benchmarks in their mind. If I reach this position or I get this promotion or I make it to this age, then I can live this life, or then I deserve to have these things. And then they kind of go a little crazy or go a little wild on it. And then it becomes like a trade-off. Like they only can enjoy their present happiness and they're not able to save or plan for the future.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with wanting nice things. The mental, emotional reason why we want to acquire more is generally rooted in this need for like your perceived value. Like we live in a world where like the nicer car you drive, the higher your perceived value is.
6 out of every 10 people surveyed said that paying for everyday expenses negatively impacted their mental health.
It does take a lot of joy from just life and always being in this scarcity mindset when there isn't necessarily a scarcity to fear.
Here's why Americans feel like they're constantly struggling to keep their paycheck, even when they start making more money.
Say you get a new job and you have a little bit of a pay bump. Suddenly there's a little more room in your budget. You know, maybe you do some small upgrades, like you eat out rather than cook at home, or buy those Taylor Swift tickets, or upgrade your music subscriptions. Anything like that is an example of lifestyle creep. It's just these little upgrades that are very hard to undo financially or even psychologically once you've made them.
I like that point. They're hard to undo once you've instilled them, because you have the sense of value, like I deserve this. As she said before, I love that comment, because we do feel entitled to live this certain lifestyle because we just quote unquote work so hard. And I tell people all the time, I said, think about the difference between someone who has $1 million and who has $500,000, right? I know I'm using big numbers, but just bear with me for a second. That the person who has a $500,000 lifestyle, right? Let's say they buy a pair of shoes, a shirt, and a pair of pants, right? If that person with $1 million lifestyle just buys two shirts and two pair of jeans or pants, that person technically is living the same lifestyle. They have the same shirts, they have the same pants, and they have the same clothes. So it's like, what's really the difference? And once again, it's this excess of need. Does the $1 million person need two pair of pants? Maybe, maybe not. If they're the same exact person, they don't. So we're just really spending more money than what we really need because we feel that we deserve it. We would like to have a closet full of shoes. We want a closet full of shirts. But once again, buying things are not bad, but figuring out what you really need and saving your money, because the person who makes $1 million could be living that $500,000 lifestyle and have $500,000 in the bank that they could put into rental property, or maybe they can just invest in it and have it grow.
A lot of people have this scarcity mindset around money and they spend so much of their lives saving. And so there can be this point where if you're constantly saving your whole life and then you finally reach this marker of financial success, or you finally reach this big paycheck number, you feel like you finally deserve to enjoy your life.
The idea.
Wait. I'm sorry to pause it again so quickly, but these super savers, they're the millionaires. They're the ones that are comfortable. They're the ones that actually live with less stress. And the sad part about it is that I've been covering these type of topics for years, and I'm here to tell you, people aren't saving. You can look at any one of my videos, Gen X, Gen Z, all these people are Gen X, baby boomers. They're not prepared for retirement. They're not prepared to, they have not been saving their money. A lot of them feel like they are not prepared for retirement. So this idea that people are just, everyone's saving, everyone's cutting back, and everyone just has, it is not true. The numbers do not equate. If you're doing that when you're 20, 30, there should be no reason you don't have money in your 50s. And another thing, you should be able to enjoy it. And not just enjoy it once you reach a certain point, enjoy it going through, but understand what you can enjoy. If your budget only allows for $200, $300, or maybe even $3,000 to enjoy, just stay within that budget as opposed to just living it up now and then struggling in retirement, talking about the government misguided us or no one talked to me about finances. Come on, let's be serious. Let's screw up here. This information is really good. I mean, but what about you? I mean, do you feel that super saving is the way to go? Do you think that causes more anxiety knowing you have money in the bank that you could pay for any emergency? Or would retail therapy be better? Come on now. Like, we got to do better. That's why, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to give both sides of the equation here, but I don't really like how that last comment sounded, but it just kind of hit a nerve.
Yeah, that people save and they just hit a point where they feel like they deserve it. I fully disagree with that. Most people don't have $1,000 in the bank.
There,
like,
you
most
go.
People cannot handle a tire blowout, or they're going to put it on credit. There's no financial literacy, no financial education that happens. The average person does not think about lifestyle inflation at all. I think it's something that's not even on the average person's radar.
Coming out of the pandemic, there was a strong desire to go out and splurge on experiences, maybe take a trip. This is often referred to as revenge spending or revenge travel. Research shows that young adults are particularly susceptible to this. They feel discouraged by higher prices and, you know, making ends meet. So they might feel like they'll never have enough money to retire anyway. They might as well enjoy themselves now. Unlike perhaps their parents were, young adults need to be more responsible for their retirement because a lot of the safety nets that maybe their parents had, like a pension, no longer exist or are extremely rare. So they need to contribute to their own 401k if they want to shore up their financial security.
There's something about spending a little more than we should that can feel like rebellious or bad. And it often can be a reaction to our family culture around money or parentified or internalized rules around what we can give ourselves. And some people might overspend as like revenge against these rules, and some might look at someone who's overspending and think and kind of label them as all bad or all good.
I totally agree. I get it all the time as a financial advisor. You know, you may be talking to an acquaintance or something like that, and you're explaining the impact of some of their decisions. And they're like, oh, you know, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, that's in theory and this is real life. And it's like, okay, you know, do what you want to do. And the crazy part about it is that you're only hurting yourself. You're not hurting me. You know, I have had clients with, you know, multi-$1 million that, you know, I says, hey, listen, if you continue down this lifestyle of all these trips to Las Vegas and different places and buying all this equipment and new cars and things of that nature, this money is going to be gone. And it's like, oh, you know, I know what I'm doing and you know, whatever it may be, but, you know, I deserve it. And the whole kit and caboodle, and like clockwork, it's gone. And then now they're taking out payday loans, trying to figure out how they're going to pay for all the stuff that they acquired. Now they're selling it at, you know, discount prices and not getting nearly as much as they pay for it, right? So, you know, all these things play a vital role in your financial planning. And once again, you're only hurting yourself. You're not hurting the people that are trying to help you and to guide you through these situations.
And there can be a lot of guilt and anxiety around the consequences. Spending is a way for us to meet one need when another isn't met.
I was 19 years old when I entered my first corporate job. I was still figuring out how to adult as well as how to be in this, you know, corporate world, make an income, which for sure led to overspending. You know, I was sad, so I would shop. I was getting serotonin through shopping. And then that led to me accumulating over $30,000 of credit card debt. And I had to figure out how the heck I was going to pay that off.
When your spending is dictated by emotions or depriving yourself or holding back your needs, that's when it becomes problematic.
I generally like to think of lifestyle inflation in sort of two buckets. You have like your general idea of what lifestyle inflation is, which is the buying fancy cars, the buying nice things along those lines. And then there is lifestyle creep that's more like regular everyday things that if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're going without, like going to the dentist, getting oil changes on your car, right? There was a time in my life when oil change was just like not even a priority. Like I'm trying to keep tires on my car. I'm trying to keep it running. I'm trying to keep the registration paid. I'm not concerned about an oil change, right?
More than 60% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck as of September 2023. That, along with inflation, can have serious financial consequences. Many Americans also don't have emergency savings to fall back on. 63% of workers say they wouldn't be able to cover a $500 emergency expense.
You know, there's that saying, being poor is really expensive, because then when it is time to get basic maintenance on your car, it ends up being way more expensive than you were planning on it being because you haven't done basic maintenance.
And that can go well beyond car trouble. 46% of Americans said they have a balance on their credit card because of an emergency expense, according to a creditcards.com survey. 10% coming from car problems, 11% to cover unexpected medical bills, and 10% for home repairs.
Because of inflation and higher prices nearly across the board, people have been having a harder time making ends meet, and often that means turning to credit cards to fill in the gap between what you need to buy and what you can actually afford.
You know, and the crazy part about this, too, is the emotional aspect. I love how they said that typically people spend to fill one need because there's a lack in another. And I could not agree more. I tell people all the time, sometimes it's a spiritual void that we're trying to fulfill. You know, we're missing things like love. We're missing companionship. We are missing the ability to socialize and to be around friends and family, or maybe it's someone that we're missing or something like that, you know, due to a passing or whatever it may be. But these are voids in our lives that we try to fill with retail therapy. And we found out time and time again, no matter how much that you spend and no matter how good you feel after the purchase, there's still that void that needs to be filled. So instead of trying to spend more and creating more problems, we should focus on the things that are internal that we can fix and that we do have a grasp on and identify them. Say, listen, I'm not feeling too good. I went through a bad situation, or maybe I lost my job, or maybe I'm having a tough time at work. I need to fill that void up with something. I need to work toward that and not just spend more money thinking that these short hits are going to be good, because those are the temptations of this world. You know, whether it's relationships with, you know, other people or whatever it may be, whether it's the spending of the credit cards, or maybe it's a rush that we have when we go to a concert and spend money that we're not supposed to spend, you know, the sense of freedom, like I can do what I want to do, that is going to cost you. All this is going to cost. And these marketers and advertisers, they prey on you. They hope that you go through things like this. This is why they're not trying to solve the problem. They are going to just make you feel like they are the answers to all your problems in the world. And that is a sad, sad situation. But I do love this video, and I hope that you're enjoying it as well. At this point, like I said, if you like videos like this, make sure you subscribe, because we love covering topics like this that talk about real Americans, real problems with real money.
Credit card rates are over 20%. That's the highest interest that you'll likely find anywhere unless you're getting a payday loan. Credit card debt can really spiral out of control and pretty quickly.
The solution to get what you need when you're in a position when you don't have it, it really is to just make more money. It sounds like a simple solution, but it also sounds like a condescending one, right? You tell somebody who like is doing the best that they can that like they need to make more money. The solution to make more money isn't really realistic.
The experts that I talked to said it's okay to treat yourself as long as you've built in a buffer in case something comes up. You want to be able to find that balance between enjoying your life and your emotional well-being and your financial well-being.
Marbriza Flores describes herself as a recovering super saver.
I would describe a super saver as someone who maybe is now in a position where they do have some sort of income, some sort of stability, but it's a certain mindset that keeps you in scarcity mode and afraid to spend on things that you may need or want and kind of affect your lifestyle in that way. My way of saving it was to hoard it.
And the tough part is that saving for the sake of saving, it's not very reinforcing, but it can kind of be addictive, and there's momentum in that.
I wouldn't advise going to that extreme. It does take a lot of joy from just life and always being in this scarcity mindset when there isn't necessarily a scarcity to fear. After working with a wealth coach, I continued to save because I was still very kind of would put me at ease in that scarcity mindset. Like, I felt at ease having kind of my savings. I continued to save money, but in a more intentional way, with the intention being of spending it.
When you're in scarcity, you're feeling this anxiety, my first thing that I like to tell individuals is forgive yourself for what you've done in survival mode. I think I like to divide it between, you know, what's essential, what's, you know, an actual bill type of expense versus a lifestyle. What's a choice that you know, take on to spend money? For example, a choice to go out drinking and having fun. And there's also not the choice. You have to make that car payment. You also have to put gas in that car for it to go, right? So there's things that you can't avoid, and there's things that you have a choice to do, and you can adjust.
Value-based spending is what I teach, and it's where you sit down and you really evaluate, one, where am I spending my money right now, and am I being reactive or am I being proactive in that? Am I spending my money in places that really have value for me, or am I spending my money in places that I think I should be spending my money because of outside influences? And once you have an idea of where your money is going right now and looking at, am I aligned with this? Is this something that I actually value?
Brothers and sisters, this is a wonderful video. That's probably, I let it run probably longer than I typically let videos run because they didn't really say anything that was out of line, especially the part where they're saying aligning your values with what you're buying. You have to know your why. I don't say save for the sake of saving. We're saving for your future health. We're saving for your future medical bills. We're saving for that maintenance idea that she was talking about, as far as even your cars and your tires and to maintain the lifestyle. I say this all the time. You can have $100,000, but it's going to cost you more to maintain that lifestyle, because the house that you buy and the cars that you drive, you're going to have to pay to maintain those things. And that's the reality a lot of people don't understand. They want the nice things, but they don't understand the cost that goes into maintaining those things. I have an Infiniti. I used to have a van, but you know, I have four kids. So that Infiniti, you can't just go to a regular tire shop. They have to order those tires, and it usually takes a day or so to get those things ordered, or you replace a windshield or something like that. So that's a cost that always comes out, but we have to prepare for that because we need the bigger space. We need a bigger vehicle because we have so many children. And once again, that's the same thing. Children are a cost. You know, children are beautiful and they're great to have, but the more kids that you have, the more you're going to have to maintain as far as food, water, clothing, shelter, transportation, education. All those things are going to be a cost to maintain the livelihood that you have, and you have to adjust your number accordingly. So, brothers and sisters, I don't want this to be any longer. If you want some more help, or you felt like this was a great video, I don't want to fall into these same traps, what you can do is get your financial five, your financial advisor, your accountant for taxes, your lawyer, power of attorney, and executor. And I explained all that and the four pillars to Christian investing. It's a 19-page beginner's guide to investing and retirement savings. It goes over the four pillars: debt management, savings, investing, and wealth transfers. And in this episode, we talked about savings and debt management because people can't get that under control. But if you can control your spending, control the emotions that come with savings, you'll be well on your way. But once again, make sure you subscribe and like, or the best thing you could do for me is watch another video. There's a lot of great content that we have on our page. We have over 1,000 videos on YouTube, and we have over 345 episodes on the podcast. So make sure that you subscribe wherever you're listening or wherever you're watching, and join me again for more exciting episodes to teach you about money so you can be rich and you can be righteous. Well, that's it for me. My name is AB Ridgeway, and I'll see you on the other side of your blessing.